everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Rethinking Supply Chain. I'm Diana Chen, and I'm here with your host, John Abrams. And we've got a very fun episode for you today, talking all about machines and machine-to-machine communication in the supply chain. So, John, I know that, you know, we're getting more and more techie even in our supply chain. More and more companies are digitizing their supply chain, which is awesome. Why is it so important that we do let the machines make decisions about product placement, about issuing product follow-up, and things like that? Why is it so important that companies let machines do all of those tasks?
Good to be back. Before I answer your question, which is a perfect question to start this next episode, just some time context for people who listen to these podcasts out of sequence or at different times than we record them. We're in the middle of the global pandemic, COVID-19. And so we had July, toward the end of July. And that's important because some of the things we talk about in supply chain, especially around machine-to-machine communication, are highlighted or enhanced by the stresses that the pandemic has put on the supply chain. And we've talked about that in previous episodes. I want to tell a little story. I took my wife down to Florida to visit her parents, and I drove because I was trying to inject more safety into that trip, into what right now in July is a COVID epicenter in Florida. But her parents are isolated, and so they're safe. And I wanted to see if I could keep my wife somewhat safe on the journey down. So we took a drive, and one of the places we stopped in, somewhere in Georgia, was a McDonald's. It was breakfast. I wanted to get some coffee. The shop itself, the store, as we call them at McDonald's, the store was open, but there were restrictions, of course, like face mask. And one of the, and this is, I'm going to tie this to machine, one of the things that we worked on back in the day at McDonald's was kiosk-based ordering. And if you go into a McDonald's these days, you've got a good chance of running into a kiosk. And the kiosk is just a computer with a touch screen. And you place your order. And so it's free of contact. It's free of interaction with a frontline or a cash register operator. And there was a sign taped on a piece of paper on the kiosk. They had four of them in this McDonald's. There was a sign taped to each one. And it said, due to COVID-19, we have shut down the order kiosks. And I thought long and hard about that because I thought, back in the day when I was at McDonald's and working with our labs, what I thought we were trying to do was eliminate the human-to-human contact. And granted, the elimination of human-to-human contact from an innovation perspective was to reduce cost. Granted, there's the sunk cost of the computer and the machine, but the point of sale operators, they make errors and they're expensive. And I'm not trying to, you know, indict manual labor, but it's not a high reward job. It's actually one that through a kiosk you can eliminate. And so I would think that the perfect application of a McDonald's ordering kiosk would be a COVID epidemic such as COVID, where you would want to interact with the machine. And I just found it profanely, maybe that's too strong of a word, but really ironic that in the middle of a COVID epidemic, we are closing down the machines because we'd rather talk to a human during a pandemic. It just seemed absurd to me. And so let me use that as a jumping off point for your question about, you know, why machines in the supply chain. And I'll use the McDonald's example to expand a little bit. If you are able, and again, I'm going way back into the archives with my work at McDonald's. If you're able to take an order ahead of time before you end up on a McDonald's property, if you're able to take that order into the system, you can begin to process that. So McDonald's is really a mini manufacturing plant that executes in real time. And so you've got your product and it gets assembled and delivered. And along the way you take payment and all of that stuff. So if you could take those orders in a more remote way, so let's say I could place the order through my phone or today, you know, whereas back then we were speculating on what you could do with a phone. Today, you can actually enter on your phone into an app and you can place the order and it can, you can get a geofence or a location aware indication of where the order is being placed from. And you can actually place it into the queue at the appropriate time so that the fries aren't soggy. So the idea of opening access to the McDonald's ordering system, the manufacturing system, from a more distant place. So not just the drive-through, not just the front counter, but from 10 miles away or 5 miles away, that actually makes McDonald's way more efficient. So it's not about, are we trying to save labor costs? It's about, can we create more throughput? Can we create more efficiency at the McDonald's by expanding the order footprint? Can we allow more people to access McDonald's from more places? In fact, the very simple concept that I and some others, although not to be boastful, but folks still give me credit for, is the simple idea of McDonald's philosophy from a technical and innovation perspective was to simply grow the endpoints. So if you could expand the number of endpoints that could interact with McDonald's, you could get more throughput, you could get more efficiency on your assets. So, you know, a McDonald's is an expensive manufacturing facility. How do I get more use, more efficiency out of that asset? And one way is to grow the endpoints and expand the number of places that you can input an order. If you expand that beyond McDonald's, it's still true. So a retailer, for example, can they, and they have used the internet to expand their footprint, to make it virtual, to allow you to interact from many different places using the internet as that vehicle that weaves all of these things together. So I use my very simple travel story. You know, you're shutting down an endpoint, which is more efficient than talking to the human. You're shutting down that endpoint at the exact wrong time. And I find that fascinating. So that's just one aspect of machine to machine in the supply chain. And it's an example we all run into every day. Where do we order from? And how do we make an asset more efficient? Of course, it goes beyond that. And in fact, where I've spent my time in startups over the last almost 10 years now is, can you enable the machines to talk together more in the business-to-business space? So not exactly at the customer side where I spent a lot of time, but in the what they call the back office or where a retailer talks to its suppliers. And it seems fairly obvious to me that allowing the machines to talk in the back office between the retailer and the supplier or the manufacturer, to allow them to communicate without having that same human and less efficient engagement in the order fulfillment, in the order processing, in the you know, rigor of the supply chain, to eliminate the human element there just seems obvious to me, but it's surprisingly slow. And I'm a little bit puzzled at that. It is happening, but it's sort of slow. And I'll take a breath and see if there's a particular direction you want me to kind of go from there, because when I start thinking about all of the barriers to why haven't the machines or why aren't the machines taking over, it's a little puzzling to me why we would say that a human order taker or a human supply chain interface is more efficient.
Yeah, that story about the McDonald's down south is fascinating, and I don't know how you would explain that at all. But before we move on, if you can kind of just illustrate for people listening what a machine-to-machine communication situation would look like in the supply chain, because I think it's very easy for all of us to envision what a machine-to-human interaction would look like. You just go to the kiosk and you order and you get your food. But just illustrate for us real quick what a machine-to-machine communication looks like in real life.
So in the supply chain, so in the back office of a retailer, you do have to have humans that say, let's pick on Macy's. So Macy's is a department store, and they order lots of different products, everything from clothing to small appliances to, a whole host of things that traditional old-fashioned department stores order. You really have to have a human that projects what styles, what colors are going to be popular in order to create a shelf, if you will, a display that attracts customers, that meets customers where their fashion or home goods needs are at any particular moment. And there's a whole bunch of science behind that and really clever people that blend art and design and fashion with science and come up with some intuitive, they would say, but very, very obvious intersections between where people and their fashion needs are, and they hit that right most of the time. And we see a particular color and we want to buy that. So there's always going to be a human element to the consumer side of supply chain. Do we have the right assortment? Do we have the right things on the shelf that attract consumers to want to purchase? But once you kind of say, hey, turquoise is the new it color for toasters this year, once you've figured that out, the machines can kind of take over. So when it comes to fulfillment across all of Macy's, you want to let the machine sort of load balance and say, okay, the capacity or the commitment from a particular manufacturer for turquoise toasters is, let's call it 100 units. And if you've got 100 Macy's stores, allocating those units, it may not be one toaster per store. It may be, turquoise and that particular toaster at that particular price point is going to move more in the Northeast than it is in Peoria. So put in the parameters into the system and let the system balance that load. And with a number of 100, that's very simple. People can do that. When it gets into much larger numbers and much larger numbers of SKUs or product, individual products, it becomes sort of overwhelming. And what humans have learned to do is use Excel to figure out how to balance allocations and how to do the orders. And so you get in a company like Macy's, you get people running spreadsheets in really elaborate ways that can be done better if you would just let the machines talk to the manufacturer and balance that load out and the allocation and the delivery times themselves. So I think that because we have lots of clever people who have learned the details of pivot tables in Excel, doesn't mean that's the right way to do it. And you'd be much better off turning over, not predicting what color is going to be popular, because that's very hard for a machine, but predicting what order patterns we're seeing over time at a particular store and allowing the machine to allocate the supply. And that's just one example. There's many other variables in the supply chain, but let the machine do the allocation rather than the human with a spreadsheet.
Gotcha. So my next question is, it's all pretty easy to envision that happening with the internet these days, but did machine-to-machine communication exist pre-internet? And if so, how did that work?
So And we should cover EDI, and I think we will in a near-term episode. A lot of that was point-to-point. So you'd establish a common ordering facility or a common fulfillment with a point-to-point connection. So you'd actually install like a they didn't use lines this big. They call them T1s or 56K lines, you know, different size pipes that would allow a connection between, say, the point of ordering and the point of receipt. And you'd let that pipe talk between those two needs, if you will. And that was called EDI, and there's a whole bunch of work behind it. But it predated the internet, and so you actually did things on a one-off approach, whereas the internet allows you to connect things in way more robust ways. And I don't think we've really moved from that point-to-point philosophy in how the supply chain works into a, hey, it's all a mesh, it's all a network. We can do things in much more robust ways. We haven't really embraced that. And I think we're at the beginning stages of that.
Gotcha. And lastly, I know we were talking on this earlier, but you had brought up W. Edwards Deming and how he, you know, came up with all these processes and supply chain with Kanban and all these other organizational systems. What can we take away from his work as applied to machine-to-machine communication?
Yeah, this is another probably full episode, but I'm glad you asked the question, because when we talk about machine-to-machine, one of the constraints, I believe, is that it's not just that we thought about connecting things in a point-to-point way, because that's all we could do 10, 20 years ago. But we are also all in the supply chain, whether we know it or not, operating under Deming philosophies. And so Deming's a fantastic statistician and really the godfather of much of the efficiency in supply chain. But Deming died before the age of computers really even existed. And so one way to look at Deming is his principles are all sound and they should be and can be implemented into systems. The problem is they're largely not. And so if you're operating a Kanban system, you're working with a philosophy that was built pre-computer, and you're dumping it into a computer system. And there's some good in that, because Deming on a computer is really cool. It's Deming on steroids. But we have to, I think, challenge some of Deming's principles. Not that efficiency, if I boiled down Deming into one thing, it's efficiency. And it's based on the numbers. And Deming would have loved the internet age. I think what we need is the Deming of the internet age to reimagine efficiency given a network mesh that connects us all. And we don't have that yet. It hasn't emerged. And we are largely still applying Deming principles and overlaying them into computers, which is not quite reimagining Deming. It's simply applying Deming in a more rapid fashion.
I love the way you phrase that. I think that clears it up so much for me, at least. And it's also really cool to see how principles that were developed hundreds of years ago, or I don't know when, but way prior to whenever the internet came out, still apply today. And we can still take a lot out of that and apply it with the new technologies that we're using today. So anyway, thanks for the chat on machine-to-machine communication. I think that is all so fascinating. And thank you all for tuning in and listening to another episode of Rethinking Supply Chain. We will be back next time to chat more about EDI standards. All right, chat soon.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Supply Chain podcast. It's brought to you by Venzi, intelligent product content distribution for enterprise commerce. Learn more and say hello to us at Venzi.com. That's VENZEE.com.